we trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
Hello, welcome to episode 94 of the In Tech We Trust podcast. I'm Nigel Poulton, and we've got Yadine Porter de Leon. Now, how was that for a pronunciation?
That was good. I'm really impressed. You guys are really dialing in. I'm starting to feel like I'm part of the In Tech We Trust family.
So you should. Hey, special news for you as well. You've got your bio up on the website.
I have to say I've been moved by these recent events. You know, my bio just got added to their Tech We Trust webpage. I think really big things are going to start happening for me. The sky's the limit.
Oh, I got to keep up with the Joneses now. I need to update mine. I can see that.
You do.
Now, when I get on the Twitter handle bio, that's just going to be icing on the cake right there.
Oh, man. Well, I tell you what, you need to prepare yourself for that because you're probably going to be blown away.
All those listeners.
I know, yeah. Anyway, so Mark, how are you?
Not bad. We're just driving around in the car, making videos, having fun.
Go on, tell us, because you've made this, I don't know how to describe it, actually. I'm just quite blown away by it. With the whole Pokemon Go thing, you had a, can I call it an exclusive interview with, what is he called, Pikachu?
Yeah, Pikachu and Charizard, right? You would think that these guys would be, you know, totally booked, but they were coming through the valley, and I got them in my car, and we did an interview. And, you know, they were just charming. Easy to get on. And, you know, I can't believe that they're actually not doing the talk show circuit. But I think everything about Pokemon Go just took the world by surprise, including Nintendo. But they need to get these guys, you know, out on the circuit.
Yeah, I mean, what are you talking about? They are doing the speaking circuit. They were on the Vulcan cast.
They were on Vulcan cast. That's right. People should go there and see the interview with Pikachu and Charizard.
We'll put a link up. Is it fair to say, though, that the insane fame that they're now experiencing has not gone to their heads yet?
No. Pikachu's still the sweetest thing ever, and Charizard, he just likes to, you know, fire flame.
Cool. Well, you know what? We've got, like, I think a great agenda for the podcast this week, but I just want to tell you about one thing that happened to me yesterday. Well, it didn't happen to me yesterday, but I was at my brother's graduation ceremony. He's just a couple of years younger than me, but he was late doing his degree. And as they were getting all sorted out in the city hall and stuff like that, there was a guy up at the front playing on this huge old pipe organ. So as you do, I was a little bit bored waiting for the ceremony to start. So I started Googling, you know, different pipe organs. And one of the searches I put into Google was, what's the biggest organ in the world? And, you know, what's the most expensive organ in the world? And the thing is, right, I'm like, what the hell is this? I find myself on this website that's telling me how much body parts cost on the black market. I'm like, how on earth have I got a link for that? And then I'm like, of course, organs, bodily organs, right? So So let me fire some questions. Just a couple of questions, right? I don't expect you to have any kind of clue as to the answer, right? Of the major bodily organs on the black market, and I'm assuming this website is, I don't know, close to being right, scary, I don't know. Which would you say is probably the most expensive?
Oh, pancreas.
Okay.
Kidneys.
Kidneys, okay. So thing is, pancreas is not on there. But kidneys, I'm looking at it right now, and yes, kidney is on this list by far and away the most expensive. Which is that not a bit weird? Because you got two, right? So you could kind of...
Yeah, but they're far more useful than, like, bladder.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so here we go, right? We've got a gallbladder.
I don't think we're going to see that on the black market.
Well, we've got $1,200 for a gallbladder here. I know that's not your bladder. Have a guess as the price of a kidney.
Like $50.
$30,000.
Well, apparently here, $262,000. So, you know, if you're short of cash, whoo, there you go.
Wow, do some self-surgery.
Yeah. Well, just like they said in The Simpsons, you can't drink yourself stupid anymore once you lose one of those.
Oh, that is very true, yeah.
You can't? I think I have, but...
Yeah, but you've got active with two of them at the moment, right?
Yeah, 200.
I don't know. After a lifetime of drinking, you get more like active, passive.
Or passive.
So kidneys are more expensive. Is liver on there?
Liver is on there, $157,000. Heart, $119,000.
Liver's more than heart?
Yeah, uh-huh. But I mean, this
kidney is more than twice as much as a heart.
I guess there's just not that much demand for the heart, man. On the black market, anyway.
You know, we've got all of these icons. You know, the pictures of hearts, and we've used, you know, for centuries, we've got pictures of hearts. I think we need to start, you know, doing pictures of kidneys.
There you go.
Where's I totally agree. But they've got shoulder $500. I mean, it's not even a shoulder. How can you donate?
How do you donate a shoulder? It's just a bunch of sinews, right? I mean, it's one of the weirdest joints in the body.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any brain on there?
No, there isn't brain on there.
Can you get like dog brain or camel brain or something like that if you need it?
I think that would be the low priced sort of a menu option for restaurants.
Yeah.
Monkey brain.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So I'm just curious, what kind of other organs, in quotes, are on the list? I mean,
okay, so it's got pair of eyeballs. So this is for $1,500.
Can I get a single one?
Wait, eyeballs are only $1,000? A pair?
A pair? Well, 1,500, so... Yeah.
Oh, I would sell them separate then.
Again, it's active-active, isn't it? You could kind of...
Oh, my gosh.
So we've got coronary artery, similar price to a pair of eyeballs, $1,500. Spleen, $500. Stomach? How do you get by without that? That's $508 as well.
Yeah, careful with the salsa.
Yeah, and then we've got skin, $10 per square inch.
Ooh. Whoa.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah. I mean, if you wanted to make $100 off of skin, you'd have to take it off your ass.
Yeah, and it's interesting. They're showing, they've got a diagram showing like countries and different values in different countries. So here we see, I'm rubbish with international flags here, but there's variation in the market here, right? So it's listed three countries here under kidney. You're only going to get 15 grand for it in that country, and I don't know whose flag it is. I'm sorry. So we've got 15 grand for a kidney in one country, 62 grand for the same kidney in another country, and 262 grand in another country. So depends where you're selling to. Yeah, maybe where that's where it comes from. No, that's where it's being sold.
Oh, yeah. Well, Russian kidneys are known to be, you know.
Those aren't source flags.
Yeah. But don't ever buy a Russian liver. Kidneys, yes. Livers, no.
Yeah, all that vodka, eh?
Mm. All the vodka. Wow.
This conversation just took a harsh turn.
Yeah.
Yes, it has.
Yeah, we better turn back to technology. Although this is kind of technology.
It is. You're right. Absolutely. Albeit biological biotech. Technology. Yeah, biotech. There you go. Okay, anyway, you know what? We've actually got a really cracking agenda, I think. So in the usual kind of enterprise-y stuff, Kubernetes gets a new release of its API. Also in enterprise techie stuff, we've got Microsoft are making noises about Azure Stack. But you know what? The really interesting stuff this week, I think like the bigger news, we're seeing like, I don't know, technologies like Facebook live streaming literally changing the kind of world we live in. We've got, what have we got? Facebook live streaming. So yeah, that was at the center of the recent police shooting incident. We've also got allegations that terrorist organizations are using Facebook for communications and plotting violence. Then there was the police robot as well. The first time ever a police robot has shot a suspected criminal dead. Not shot a suspected criminal dead, but
basically killed him.
Yeah. Killed him, yeah. And you know what? This is all on top of the driverless car incident that we had very recently. I'm just thinking like, wow, you add this together with the whole Pokemon stuff and the world is a-changing, right?
It sure is.
So, if you guys don't mind, are we cool hitting like the Kubernetes stuff first before we get on the really interesting stuff?
Is that because it's the most interesting to you, Nigel?
Why am I not surprised you wanted to start with that one?
No, I mean, it is interesting to me. It's just I think that if we do all the really interesting Facebook stuff that literally does seem to be changing the world, then the Kubernetes stuff really just pales into insignificance.
Are you sure that's not going to happen if we do it first?
Yeah, probably. But okay,
let me ask you the question then, Nigel. Let's start with you and let me or Yadin ask. Yadin, do you want to ask or do you want me to ask?
Yeah, I wanted to ask to see if you were as excited about Cluster Federation as everybody else is.
I couldn't be more excited. I couldn't.
Cluster Fed.
Yeah. So is it really one centralized control, sort of like what, TCP, cloud, on-prem, all that kind of, you know, in one place. Is that,
hey, slow down, slow down, Yanine. I was going to ask the question, what is it first?
Let's take a step
back. You're like in the pool swimming, man. I'm still on the edge, just sticking my toes in.
I'll kick it over to you, Mark. Why don't you ask
Nigel, back at DockerCon a couple of weeks ago, it sounded like, you know, Docker was coming up with a Kubernetes killer with their automation, and now Kubernetes comes out with a release. You know, is this in response to what Docker did? Do you think they were going to do this anyway? And how does it compare? How is it different?
Yeah, I don't think it's a reaction to what Docker have announced. I don't think they'd have had time to bake something like this so quickly. I'm pretty sure it's been in the pipeline for a while, actually. In fact, so I think just as a quick bit of background, the big thing here with regards to Kubernetes, or Cumbernauts, as my wife likes to call them, when she's trying to be half technical and can't get the lingo right. But no, so 1.3 of the Kubernetes API was released, and basically that just brings a load of new functionality and more scalability and what have you. The thing is, though, right, I don't think it's a reaction to what Docker said, but what I love about it is that they're kind of going head-to-head, and I just love that kind of competition, because that really is, at the end of the day, what drives innovation, right? And as a technologist and somebody that loves technologies, and especially in this area, I'm just loving the potential battle that we're going to see in the future with Docker going against Kubernetes, going against Mesosphere, DCOS, and things like that. Because, I don't know, you guys shout me down here if you think I'm wrong about this, but, you know, as cool as VMware, is, there was never really massive competition there, was there? They kind of chiseled out a market and just left everybody else behind. And they innovated and all that, don't get me wrong, but I'm hoping that we see for the next few years, you know, those three giants of the container space go head to head. I'd love to see that.
I think we're going to see some more co-opetition than anything else. I think the list that you just listed off is emblematic of what the current landscape is, because I noticed you left CoreOS and Rocket off of that list.
Well, I'm going to come to that, but sure.
Yeah, easy.
So like, oh, yeah, and then those guys over there at Rocket.
No, not at all. So, I mean, the thing is, at the end of the day, CoreOS and I think their Tectonic product offer like a packaged Kubernetes, okay? So when I talk about Kubernetes, it's like it's got a lot of industry-wide adoption, doesn't it? So it's not just – well, I'm not just talking about Google or the Google Cloud here. I'm talking about all of the third-party ISVs that, you know, package Kubernetes. I mean, Platform 9 do it as well at the moment. But you know what? Talking about CoreOS and Rocket, right, that's one of the things that Kubernetes now supports. It supports Rocket as well as Docker as the container runtime. Now, I think right now that's a bit of a okay, because you'd be really hard pushed, I think, to find anybody who could even demo Rocket to you right now. But again, in the spirit of competition or co-opetition, I think having two container runtimes is, I think, probably going to be a good thing going forward as well.
Yeah. Well, it'll definitely service that whole, you know, quote unquote competition that you might see in the future. But like you said, I was watching this, this Kubernetes meetup, and the person who was, you know, sort of presenting 1.3 was like, you know, and it supports Rocket. And they were like crickets, and like, in case anybody wants to do that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a shame, actually, because I would, kind of half me would like to see Rocket do really well. I don't know if there actually is space for two container runtimes. Like, there's not, well, maybe these days in the hypervisor space, there is space for multiple hypervisors.
I also feel like Alex is really trying to do something different at CoreOS. And Alex, I think, will say the same thing in all the interviews that I've heard with him, is that he's doing something fundamentally different than Docker is. And I think they're doing it well. And I think Docker's, you know, from the response that they're getting, I think they're doing what they're doing well. And some people say it's like Docker versus Rocket, but I don't think that's come out in the marketplace. Have you seen that, Nigel? I haven't seen really this.
I totally have not. Rocket, no.
Anywhere.
Not at all now. But I think now that Docker is squaring up against the likes of Kubernetes and Mesosphere DCOS, I think we will see head-to-heads and things there. Because that's where, to be fair, the innovation is going to... And you know what? That's, to be fair, where the money is going to be made, that orchestration layer as well. So I think we are going to see some titans in that space going head-to-head and fighting over partners like IBM and HPE and probably Cisco and people like that as well, Red Hat, those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see who the... you know, if anybody emerges as a leading integrator in the cloud space, and who will that be? It may be a name we don't even know yet, and it sounds weird considering, you know, that it's been out there for a while. But the companies you just named, I'm scratching my head and I'm thinking, really? They're going to be doing that? You know, is that where people are going to be going? I don't know. I have a hard time believing that's it.
Well, I mean, you probably experienced this, you know, where VMware was one of those names back in the day. We're like, VMware? Who were those guys?
Yeah. Did you mention Rackspace? I think you did.
No, I didn't mention Rackspace.
Yeah, Rackspace, I might believe as a player there, but we'll see.
Yeah. But wouldn't it be great if we did see some new technology giants come out of this container movement? You know, the CoreOS's and the Dockers and people like that, paving new ways. I think that would be a great story.
Yeah, one would hope so. It almost seems like it's an opportunity that's ripe for the picking.
Yeah. Well, I think once these things stop becoming really cool and they start becoming, like many people have said over and over again, they start becoming commodity and they start becoming just the back ends of things, they start becoming the plumbing. And this has been sort of reiterated on, you know, places like theCUBE and elsewhere, where until that happens, you're not really going to see these, you know, take off in the same way that VMs do until it stops becoming, when it stops becoming cool and it just becomes something that everyone just does. It's still going to be sort of a lot of, you know, a lot of science experiments next to, you know, large enterprise deployments next to science experiments.
You know, I'm starting to see a little bit of that, I think, already in the fact that, okay, the container runtime, like the Docker engine or Rocket, they're effectively commoditized. I'm not sure that's quite where you were going with this. Maybe it was. And, you know, there's no value and no money to be made there. It's all around the services that wrap around them, like the Kubernetes and the Swarms and the Mesospheres and stuff. Not sure if that's where you were going, though, Yadin.
Yeah, kind of. One really interesting story I heard was about this one cloud scale consulting firm that actually was consulting, was helping people get integrated with, you know, or doing cloud scale, was helping people getting Docker, you know, loaded, but they actually hadn't done like containers for themselves. And then they just did them recently, and they were just talking about how incredibly painful it was and complex it was to move some of their applications but they wanted to sort of eat their own dog food and do it themselves. And there's a certain type of organization that's really interested in that kind of complexity, but the rest of the organization really aren't. And I think one of the other items that is on the agenda today, Azure Stack, is one of the main reasons why I think that sort of offering is out there, is because that a lot of the people, you know, don't want to have that complexity. I think people like a Platform 9 or on the other side of that, you know, a Pivotal Cloud Foundry, they're going to have a lot of power within the marketplace, and it's growing simply because people want to care less about how cool and new and interesting and what's the new API set for, you know, for 1.3 of Kubernetes. And they want to care more about, you know, what does my line of business need? And I think there was a really great haiku that was in the Pivotal Cloud Foundry talk that was just, it was basically like, here's my code, here's my source code, run it in the cloud. I don't care how. And they kept repeating that over and over again. Here's my source code. Run it in the cloud for me. I don't care how. Just do it.
And whoever cracks that is onto a winner, let me tell you. Well, mentioning Azure Stack, okay. It's still not general availability as far as I'm aware. It's TP1, Tech Preview 1. Is that what that stands for?
Toilet Paper 1.
Yeah. I like that. But yeah, there's a blog out from Microsoft today, I think. Yeah, it was today, the 12th. Just bigging up the kind of success that they're having with this Tech Preview. And yeah, I've not used it, okay, but I've seen a few demos of it and things like that. I'm actually, okay, I'm going to sound sad here, but I'm really excited about it when it does go general availability, because I think it's going to be, the way I see it, right, a massive enabler for traditional enterprises to start deploying proper hybrid clouds.
Ah, proper hybrid cloud. There's a debate right there. But yeah, it's
proper.
New hybrid cloud platform, I think, was just sort of an inevitability. But the way they packaged it, which was more, I think, in marketing terms rather than technical terms, which is that there's like, we're listening to customers. They say they want, you know, simplicity. They want to deal less with the complexity, and they want to deal more time with the application and the needs of the business. And so they want to consume it quickly, and they want a just works solution. So, you know, which is one of the things that reminded me of that Pivotal Cloud Foundry thing. But I think if Azure adopts something like this and they get it going, and I saw that some of the POC stuff was happening starting in May, and so it's now in, I guess, Technical Preview 1, which is just sort of moving along that Microsoft conveyor belt, you're going to get a whole bunch of adoption. You're just going to get a lot of people who are going to see a lot of use cases, and there's going to be a lot of good feedback loop. And I think because Microsoft is a new company, they're actually going to make something that works and that people use, and it makes people's life easier. I know, crazy. I'm saying it out loud.
I think you're crazy. I think you're crazy, Hadid. So the way this works, right, is that Microsoft is pushing this software onto its partners, Dell, HPE, who else, Lenovo, you know, who else is out there carrying this stuff, right? And the real problem is they'll say it's simple, and Microsoft might be able to spell simple, but I don't think they could pronounce it. I think they pronounce it simpler.
Mm. Oh, don't get me wrong, Mark. It's going to suck when it first comes out.
Hey there.
Just like a lot of stuff.
There we go.
It's going to suck.
Because if you need support for this thing, like if it's not simple enough, and there's chances are it won't because of aforementioned problems with Microsoft knowing how to pronounce simple, then where do you go for support? Who's going to support it? Because I almost guarantee you if you call Dell or HPE or Lenovo or whatever, you're going to get, you know, a first level support that pretty much says, oh, how do you spell that?
First, what product are you using?
Yeah.
You know, like, I can't see your registration key doesn't work. I don't see you actually registered for the product. Send me all the logs from all of your nodes or servers or whatever they happen to have deployed into their environment. And then 2 weeks later, once you've gathered all the information, it's like, well, these are too old. Can you send us the most recent logs?
But so another question that's related to this, though, say let's just say you're somebody like HPE. And HPE back at at Discover, they talked about the integration with Docker. And Docker spoke about it at DockerCon. And you know, the idea is that they're putting together this bundled project and or bundled product. And HP is going to take on support for this. And that support will be, you know, whatever it is. But my guess is if you're HP and you're doing this work with Docker, you're putting more of your resources into this Docker boat than you are with Microsoft. Right. Because the Microsoft deal is yet another one of these pain in the ass. I'm just going to call it that, software license deals that Microsoft rams down the throats of their partners, so-called partners. Right. It's like, we've got a great idea. How about if you guys take this on? Right. And they have been negotiating this stuff for decades and it's getting old and tired. And I don't know that anybody is like, really, hey, let's do this with Microsoft when you've got this other stuff with a lot of momentum, for instance, Docker.
Hey, but I totally get that, right, Mark? But when you're talking about Microsoft doesn't know even how to spell simple right, are you talking here about implementation of something like Azure Stack? And I'll tell you the reason why I ask that, okay? Because we've just been talking about, you know, the complexities of refactoring your applications into microservices and stuff if you're wanting to deploy on platforms like Kubernetes and Swarm and DCOS and stuff like that. Surely, in the this Microsoft Azure model. I mean, look, a couple of weeks ago in the podcast, I said, I don't know, that I thought I'd seen the future on stage at DockerCon when I saw Azure Stack on stage. It was running SQL Server for Linux inside of a Docker container. I'm like, you know, at the time, this is awesome. But at the end of the day, it was still legacy monolithic SQL Server. So getting to my point, I think, is that I think deploying Azure Stack, while the deployment might be complex, surely the getting your applications onto it has got to be a lot easier than refactoring your apps into microservice-based apps, right? Because I think you can just take, you know, SQL and Exchange and things like that and almost lift and dump it onto Azure and Azure Stack. That's the way I see it, at least.
Yeah, and I think that lower level of friction is what's really going to get people interested in something like a Microsoft product. And basically, they get a hook in, and like you said, Mark, there's this stuff that they're going to shove down the partner's throat. They have this great idea, but it's thin on, you know, actual technical capabilities, but there's going to be a really strong feedback loop through that channel that allows them to actually iterate, get it better, and, you know, the execution on that idea is whether or not it's going to, you know, fail or whether it's going to succeed. Because I think in some ways you are looking at a different Microsoft, but some of these new things that they're doing are still shoehorned into a very old, very monolithic way of doing business, you know, to your point as well. And you're going to see some legacy behavior, but you're also going to see, and I'm, you know, weirdly optimistic that you're actually going to see, you know, a different end result.
Yeah, so the problem with this, though, right, is the way that the revenue is distributed between Microsoft and its partners and the way the support burden is implemented. You know, there has to be support, and who pays for it, and how do they afford it, and what kind of resources do they put on it? Anytime, you know, it's just hard, you know, when you try to make this stuff available for not a lot of money, where is the money left to support the business?
Yeah. Hey, you know what? On the support point, and getting back to your earlier point, I think, Mark, of saying that support's going to be rubbish, you're going to get level one, and they're going to be like, yeah, how do you spell that? I think I've nailed what their biggest support issue is going to be. I can see it now, right? People are going to pick the phone up to Lenovo or HPE or whoever, right, that are their partners, and they're going to log a call against Azure, and it's going to go around the houses, and it's like, yeah, we're trying to find somebody. And then finally somebody's going to say, oh, you mean Azure? So that stupid name that nobody knows how to pronounce is going to bite them in the ass.
Well done, Nigel. Oh, yeah. My God.
Azure, as I've heard it pronounced many times.
I was just honestly waiting for that punchline, and it was so surprising. It was really good. Nice. Yeah.
If I had a dollar for every different way I'd heard that pronounced, I would be a wealthy man.
Yeah, I'd have like $3.
Yeah, no, I'd probably have about four, maybe. Okay, so let's pivot slightly. Not slightly, quite a lot, actually. Facebook, man, oh man, this live video streaming platform that they've got. I just think this is going to change the world. What a powerful enabler that is for, I don't know, do you think we're kind of embarking into a world of no more secrets? I mean, that's a weird question. I get that.
We're not there already.
I don't know.
What we are embarking on is we've seen, you know, the television networks change over into reality TV, and they set up these circumstances, and then they film it and they watch people's reactions, and they've become very, very popular, and, you know, people like them. For one reason or another, to now we're getting a reality video, and people get to choose what is interesting to them. And horribly, horribly enough, it is just afterwards when this guy was shot. I can't remember his name right now. I'm sorry.
Philander Castile.
Yeah, in St. Paul. Mr. Castile was shot, and his girlfriend is videoing this scenario. And it goes right up to Facebook. And I don't know if you guys saw this or not. Did either of you see it?
Yeah, I did. I watched the whole thing.
Oh, my gosh.
Did all three of us?
Oh, my gosh. This is like the most horrifying thing ever, right? And I stopped it after a while. It's just like, shit, I can't take this.
You know, when you're saying, Mark and T, you know, or Nigel, both transitioning to that world of no secrets, you know, what we're really doing is we're creating, you know, this, you know, the, and the social media has created something that some people abhor. They abhor like all sort of the oversharing. But the problem, the advantage of that is you're also sharing things that are really important, and it's enabling people in this very frictionless way to immediately share what's going on. And there was this whole cohort of people, you know, in different pockets of the world, you know, a large part in the United States, that felt that because they didn't actually see it, they didn't experience in the way that you guys are describing and how horrified you are. They didn't experience it in that way. They had this warped perception of what reality was. A lot of people said, well, you know, racism isn't exist, you know, doesn't exist for the most part. Sexism doesn't exist for the most part. And then you have people exposing the raw reality, and they're enabled by things like Facebook, Periscope, and other platforms like this in the seamless way that not only seamlessly enables them to capture it, but then distribute it and for it to be broadcast worldwide. And that's a powerful tool, but we're just in that first stage of transparency. And so it's enabling transparency, but none of the change is inherently enabled, you know, within the platform. So the transparency component is in place, and that's just the beginning of the kernel of being able to actually first take the first step and say, okay, people realize I see it now in front of me. Now I realize it's a problem.
It's not clear that we can handle it, right? It's really not clear that can handle it. All it takes is one guy, right? Like in Dallas, all it takes is one guy to be so moved by what he saw that he goes out and, you know, you could say whatever you want about individuals with screws loose, but we're all emotional beings, and we all have various reactions to things, and emotions will put us over the edge. I mean, that's something that we know, and you don't have to be a nut job beforehand. You know, the shooter in Dallas, I don't think anybody saw that guy coming, you know, and all of a sudden he gets moved by this video, presumably he saw on Facebook, and then takes the next step. I mean, as creatures, I don't know that we can handle this.
Oh, I think we can, Mark. I mean, look, I'm going to embarrass myself here. I'm no history buff or anything like that, but we've been here before, right? I mean, we've come out of the dark ages and things when, you know, we were, as a people, I'm going to generalize massively here, okay, but we were kind of forced into believing that the Earth was the center of the universe, right? And maybe that it was flat and all kinds of things. And, you know, as we come out of those kind of eras, there's been turbulence. I mean, please tell me who the guy was who was it that you know, went up against the Catholic Church saying, you know, the Earth is not the center of the universe. Oh, good.
You're talking about Galileo?
Galileo. Right, yeah. And the way he was treated and his peers and people at the time and, you know, the kind of ructions that caused across the world. I mean, people were killed, you know, in the name of science and in the name of religion and all kinds of things. And, you know, and that's just one of many examples. I think when we see truly, and I do think this is a truly seismic change we're about to experience here, things get bad for a while, but then I think we kind of come to terms with it and sort it out. Because I see technologies like this, you know, okay, we have those two recent incidents involving police shooting, okay? But technologies like this are already changing the world in China, and they're going to change the world in a lot of these places, in my opinion, right, where women are suppressed, girls are suppressed, they can't have education, stuff like that. You know, I think it's going to just, I don't know, I'm getting the hairs on the back of my neck are standing up now, but I don't know, I think this is going to change the world for good. Sure enough, right, it's the Wild West at the moment, and, you know, there's pretty dangerous and awful things happening, but I think we've been there before, and I think as a race, I hope we can survive it.
Yeah, well, on one level, I'm going to disagree with you, Nigel. And since you brought up Galileo, I'll bring up Plato. And Plato had that allegory of the cave where he presented to the Greek philosophers, and he talked about all these people live their whole lives chained in this cave, and all they saw of the world were these shadows of people passing by a light, and that was all they could see. And one person finally got free, and they could see, no, this is not what it is, and they came back to all the people in the cave, said, no, this is what the real world, this is the reality. And there was a famous quote by Plato, says, those who are able to see beyond the shadows and lies of their culture will never be understood, let alone believed by the masses. And the whole core of that is that
that's why I'm so badly understood. Then, yeah.
people are so inert and attached to a system that gives them their identity, that gives them their value, that gives them their community.
Totally,
if that system is threatened in a way that is too, or if it's too threatening, it has to be gradual. If it's too threatening, all it does is create a stronger backlash, and you actually get backwards movement. And we've seen this repeated throughout. And that while the technology is phenomenal for taking that first step of transparency, there is going to be some insane entrenchment. And we can see that already politically within our, you know, within different areas of the world, especially the United States, that transparency is going to create a backlash and entrenchment, and then the pendulum is going to swing the other way. But the pendulum first, it's going to swing in the wrong direction. So yes, to your point, it'll eventually change the world, yeah, but not for another generation or so.
You know, it's interesting to think about what Facebook's responsibilities are for this, right? I mean, what are they supposed to do? They took that video down, they put it back up. I mean, can you imagine being at Facebook and being one of the people faced with the decision, what do we do about this, right? Can you imagine what that would be like? I mean, that's not easy. That is a really, really
hard. Well, that goes
hard,
to the top, right?
Hard decision. Oh, that goes right to the top.
Did you read Zuckerberg's response? I just saw that he responded to it, but I didn't get a chance to read Zuckerberg's response to that.
So I did skim through it, yeah. It was the response, at least, that I read was around, you know, they've got a policy, and their policy is nothing that glorifies violence and promotes violence and things like that. But if it's in the interest of the general public and the wider public, then that kind of stuff is supposed to stay up there. But again, it's really early days. Like I said, it's the Wild West. And I think that's what you were hinting at, Yadin, that these are changes, right? And it's going to go to and fro for quite a while. But I think, you know, very rapidly, we're going to have to start to get our heads around, you know, what our policies and what is acceptable in things like this. Because I, for one, okay, I'm like, I'm a real minimalist when it comes to whether I think things like this should have oversight and whether I think there should be policy. I really, I really don't think there should be. Okay, you know, in extreme circumstances, yes, there should, and you can't just let everything be out there. But I'm a massive fan of thinking that people should be self-regulating. We should leave people, you know, up to their own means to decide what they're capable of viewing and what they're not. Children and things like that. I appreciate there are, you know, certain circumstances and what have you. But for the most part, I don't know. I would hope that there isn't, you know, major government legislation by the EU, right? Or by, you know, whatever government. Okay, that was a low blow. I would hope that the industry and us as technology leaders, Zuckerberg and people like that would be able to, you know, let this kind of work itself out.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I'm not sure that we want government to control the messaging around racism, right? But we certainly, do we want popular opinion also to control the messaging around racism? I'm not sure we want that either, right? If you've got government versus popular opinion, you know, we think we could do better than that, but I'm not sure that we can.
It's a good point, and I'm going to make a really geeky analogy here. But in the tech world, right, any kind of massively scalable clustering system these days, it seems to me, uses forms of gossip protocol, okay, where every, you know, peers talk to each other and there's this eventual consistency and what have you. At scale in technology, it seems, and I could be totally wrong about this, right, but it seems current trends are the only way to do that are peer-to-peer gossip protocols. Now, look at the kind of scales we're talking about here when it comes to governance and when it comes to communication in the world and what have you. The old hierarchical top-down approaches, I don't think they scale for the kind of connected world that we live in these days. And that kind of popular opinion is maybe the only way forward. I have no idea.
It's tough because there has to be a combination of both of those approaches. The problem that technology faces is that it sits in the middle between having to be a broker for government regulation and also that sort of, you know, laissez-faire or sort of Lord of the Flies type of behavior where you let a lot of people, you know, work it out. Because it's great when you're a consumer, you can have that very much, you know, self-regulatory type of perspective. But when you're a participant, when this affects you personally, well, let's say that's your daughter or your son or your brother, and that stuff is out there and then you're associated with it, even though you had nothing to do with the actual incident, all of a sudden it becomes a very, very different paradigm for you. You're not a consumer. You're a part of that piece. And so what are your rights to be able to actually go to Facebook and say, hey, look, Zuckerberg, I don't want that up anymore because this is what it's doing to my life right now. And like, well, it's free speech. It's for our policy. It's like, okay, great. Well, I've got 20,000 people camped out in front of my house, you know, every time I go out and get the mail. And is that something that needs to be considered within that paradigm? And unfortunately, Facebook's, you know, and the Facebooks of the world, they're the ones that have to sort through that mess.
Popular opinion is one of those things that has been manipulated over and over again. And I think we've proven that we can't get around that. We can't get past it. Right. And it can cause and has caused in our history enormous problems when people that are very persuasive gain the ear of popular opinion. You've got populist movements around the globe. A lot of people would say there's nothing wrong with that. A lot of people would say, oh, my God, this is a freaking nightmare. Just getting ramped up, waiting to happen. These are really dangerous things. And the immediacy of putting this kind of material out there can really stoke that. So maybe the technology's fine. Maybe I think Facebook was right to put it up. I think they were right to put it back up. I think they were right to think about it. But as a society, I don't know that we, I'm going back to what I said before. I don't know that we can handle it. We've got a shitload of work to do.
We do. You know what? On this idea of can we handle it as a society and maybe the pendulum swinging, like you said, Eugene, in the wrong direction first. One of the things I was wondering, right, when I was reading around all this Facebook stuff, because there's the other story as well that there's a legal case been brought against Facebook in the States over Hamas in Israel using the Facebook platform to communicate and to plot violence and things like that. And I started to think, you know, well, you know, what kind of responsibility does Facebook have? Do they need their own kind of like counter-terrorist sort of department to be weeding through things like this?
But I think they need Jack Bauer in the CTU.
That's it, yeah. But then I started to wonder as well, when do organizations like this that have technology platforms that enable such change, and such change that is frightening for a lot of people, okay, and when do they start becoming serious terrorist targets as well, as individuals, as organizations, the platform itself for kind of, not bioterrorism, what am I, cyber terrorism, things like that. I mean, the whole paradigm there kind of shifts as well, doesn't it? From, you know, not away from governments being targets and what have you, but we suddenly have these potential additional terrorist targets in the likes of Facebook and stuff, because if they're going to affect change in countries and societies and civilizations and all that kind of jazz that are resistant to them, whoo, they're in the firing line potentially.
It's an interesting idea. I haven't really thought about it very much. If you work at Facebook or Google, I mean, the lawsuit that you talk about is interesting. Are they suing anybody else, like the network carriers that, you know, have this information on it? And it's interesting they pick out on Facebook, but there's a whole lot of other technology, you know, in that stack that it's also involved. Are they suing all of them too?
Well, it's not just even in that stack, is it? I mean, people have used the telephone before to plot terrorist acts. They've used the postal service. They've used logistics companies to transport things. I mean, we don't sue those people, do we? It's not their fault in any way. They've just picked Facebook, surely, as not a soft target, because I can't imagine that they'll get anywhere with the suit. But
there's just been no precedent set, and I think that's what they're trying to do. It's the tough thing is we have these very clumsy instruments like the legal system in order to be able to create kind of boundaries of operations and boundaries of behavior. And we have to go in and we have to pick somebody who's standing in front of us to say, you, I think, might be the problem. I'm not totally sure. And let's let the legal system decide. And then, you know, you can do that through precedent legal, and you can also pass legislation and use the law, you know, from the other side to do that. Unfortunately, these are both very clumsy laws. And, like I think somebody said, where, you know, technology is fast but painful. Cultural legal change is incredibly slow and painful.
Yeah, I mean, you know, cell phone networks, you know, texting each other, right? There's been all kinds of bombs blown up with people just, you know, sending a text message to someone, you know, and they text all the time. I mean, can you sue a wireless service provider for providing messaging services?
It's bobbins. It's nonsense.
I think it's nonsense too. I think it's silly. And I think they're just suing Facebook because they think they have a lot of money.
Could be.
What's a bobbin?
Bobbins. Oh yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Well, that's why I know possibly more ways of pronouncing, what was it? Azure. Than you do. Cause I think over here in the UK, we've got all kinds of weird pronunciations, words and stuff like that.
You're a creative country.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we're going to need it. So, you know what? Speaking of the influence that technology is having in our day-to-day life, right? With this police shooting incident in Dallas just this last week, another technology came really to the forefront here. The first time ever a police-controlled robot has been used to kill a suspected criminal. So, you know, we had, I think either it was last week or the week before, there was the whole, that guy that was tragically killed actually in the driverless Tesla car. You know, a great example of technology totally changing the world that we live in, right? Transport, yeah, and all that kind of jazz. And here we have robots really coming to the forefront of current affairs, right? You know, surely, Mark, this is going to be the kind of thing that'll just be normal for at least my kids growing up, right? They won't remember the days before police robots were used in things like this, right?
You wonder why it didn't happen before, right? A couple decades ago, you had the RoboCop movies, which, you know, you know, certainly glorified and crazy, and, you know, you had a humanoid robot, but, you know, it really begged the question, why don't we send robots in to do certain things that are really dangerous to people? And, you know, you see that with bomb squads. You know, robots will go in and somebody will drive a robot to go in and try to, you know, defuse a bomb, right?
It's totally the future, right, isn't it?
Because, totally. I mean,
it just makes so much sense. And it will look so old school and arcane, I'm sure, to our kids as they grow up. I mean, so my kids are like 5, 7, and 10. You know, if they were to see I forget what that film is, of the US soldier that was the bomb guy. Oh, it's only like 3 or 4 years old. Never mind.
Yeah, that was a terrific movie. Yeah.
It was a great film, but he's got this big, like, cumbersome suit on that he can hardly move in, and he's, like, trying to, you know, detonate a bomb safely, and he has to run away at one point, and he can hardly move when he runs. It's like, this is made for a robot, right?
Yeah, and let's face it, a lot of public defense, public safety work is actually better suited to robots than human beings. Human beings can make snap decisions and do amazing things, and they also succumb to smoke. And I don't want to be unfair to anybody here, but, you know, police that make traffic stops that end up shooting guys, I'm sure a lot of the times when that happens, it's because their heart is racing. You know, they don't want to get shot. They've seen other people get shot. Yeah. You know, they've gone through all kinds of training. This is hard stuff. And you could say, change the weapons they have. Give them tasers. Give them more training or something. Like, how about if we give them robots that if somebody shoots a robot, no big deal, right? It just, you know, these kinds of things. Like, I think in the future we'll probably see, and my guess is there are companies that are probably working on robots to do traffic checks where a cop sits in the car, or even, you know, the remote is issued, you know, or the robot is controlled remotely and somebody else does this thing, and that'll be freaky and everybody will worry about that. But, you know, let's not arm the robot with guns, and, you know, let's just have them go up and read the materials from somebody's driver's license. You know, you can put a driver's license on a tray and have it scanned. You can do all this stuff.
We're not sending a 209 out fully primed.
We're not putting, you know, semi-automatic weapons in the hands of a robot and flamethrowers in the hands of a robot and all of this stuff, right? We're putting document scanners out there, you know, other things. And, you know, what would make sense if you were building a robot to facilitate traffic stops? How would you build it? There's a product management question, and it would be an interesting set of things. Maybe it would latch onto the car's tire so it couldn't drive. I mean, there'd be all kinds of things that you could do. But they wouldn't be emotionally charged and volatile where people end up getting killed.
Agreed, yeah. It's another one that for our kids is going to be like a no-brainer, and they're going to look back and be like, what, people used to do that? You know, like you say, people that are sweating, nervous, heart racing, thinking about their family at home, what might happen, what might not happen. Hey, I just thought something, Mark. It's at least Generation 1 robots that won't be sweating and having the pulse racing and thinking about their families at home. The next generation that are fully sentient, artificially intelligent, well, hey, what do we do then? We're thinking too far ahead now, though.
Yeah, and possibly a robot would not be racist in any way, possibly, right? And racism is just one of those really hard things. You know, let's say a robot could be colorblind. A person guiding a robot might not be, but the robot itself might be completely colorblind. That would be a good thing.
Yeah. But you know what? And this is maybe not a conversation for the podcast. It doesn't fix the underlying issue, though, does it? As people, we should be colorblind as well, really.
We should be, but we don't grow up that way. And we've got, you know, the nurture part of us is tough with regards to race.
Okay, so let's wind the show out with a hot or not, right? And I think as it's topical, and we don't have Lauren, actually, in the interest of time and speed, I'll just go with it, okay? So is this Facebook live streaming thing and everything it promises to deliver, is it hot or is it not? Yadin, you go first.
Oh, it's definitely hot. Yeah, it's got people excited. It has an energy to it that's going to it's going to reverberate just beyond this incident, and there's going to be a lot more that we're going to see like this, so it's very much in the hot category.
Cool. Mark?
Oh, as incendiary as this is, I'm going to say it's not hot. Because it has the ability to change society and change culture and spark these enormous things, and that is hotter than hell. But for the most part, people are going to be putting up unedited crap that sucks. And most of the live streaming material is going to suck and be boring and awful to watch. So I say not hot.
Isn't that the whole point of C-SPAN?
Yeah.
is that every once in a while something interesting happens.
Touché, Dean. You got me.
Not everybody can get Pokemon characters in their car to interview, you know, Mark. They're not all celebs like you.
Yeah, that's right. I should have done that on Periscope.
So I'll just add my penny's worth here. I think it is smoking hot. And I'm telling you, right, I've never been so excited about the kind of changes that are afoot from, since the 1.3 version of the Kubernetes API.